Welcome to Self-Directed. We are your hosts, Cecilia and Jesper Conrad. And now it's time to welcome this week's guest.
So today we're together with Sue Elvis, who has Stories of an Unschooling Family.com, wonderful website. And first of all, Sue, I'm super happy we finally got together. It's wonderful to meet you.
It's lovely to meet you, Jesper and Cecilia. Yes, I've been looking forward to this for a long time, and thank you for the invitation to join you on your podcast.
Yeah, and
it's gonna be fun.
And we have tried back and forth to get hold of each other, and finally we succeeded. And right now we are in Fresno in the United States. And the friend, we are co-living with an unschooling family here. And our friend here, she said to me one day while we were here, she said, you should really talk with Sue Elvis. And I was like, yeah, but I've tried to get hold of her and we have missed each other. And that was why I reached out to you again recently. And now we're here.
She's apparently been following you
for a long time.
Yeah.
And actually I said to her, so what should I ask Sue about? And she said, oh, how do you manage to be there for so many children at the same time when each of them want to do something different? She has four children. We have four children. And I'm not sure it's possible to answer that question, but what would be your take on helping out many children at the same time when their direction goes in different ways?
Well, we have eight children, but one of our children died as a baby. So I say homeschooled or unschooled seven children. But when we say we unschooled them, that doesn't mean that. I think that sounds like we did something to our children instead of working alongside our children and supporting and encouraging them. It wasn't like we had to sit down every day and do schoolwork with all those children. It was more that we did things together. My children did things by themselves, but I was always available to help. So all through the years, I've always had my own interests. I've been blogging, I think I have 14 years, podcasting, though I haven't made a podcast recently. I started that 10 years ago. So I did that alongside helping my kids. But I always said the mornings were the times when I wouldn't do anything in the mornings other than be available for my children. So we'd go places, I'd read out loud if that's what they wanted, help them find resources, just sit and listen to them, drink coffee, go places. And I think a lot of what we did over the years, we did as a family. They had their own interests, but a lot of those interests overlapped and they worked together. But I didn't have to do grade one with this child and grade six with that child and grade 12 with that child. If we had certain subjects or passions in common, like Shakespeare and Jane Austen, and everybody would come and watch a Shakespeare play together. And we'd just sit there and have popcorn and enjoy a morning of Shakespeare. And that was really easy. If we had a baby, I used to breastfeed while I was reading to my kids, or my kids would play with the toddler while we chatted about things. But I think a lot of it was working together, that we didn't do things. Well, I say we didn't do things individually. My kids did have individual interests. And there were times when I had to give them one-on-one encouragement, help, resources, or whatever. But a lot of the time, we worked together. For example, we had a few years where fourth child, second daughter, Imogen, was making music videos. And so we'd get up early, I think it was once every couple of weeks, and go to a location which we had already decided upon. She would have recorded the music and we would film a music video. But my daughter Sophie, her passion was videography, so she contributed to that. My passion is, in an amateur way, photography, so I would do the photos for her. My daughter Charlotte was quite happy to do the behind the scenes videos. And yeah, my youngest daughter, she found jobs to do as well. So we all work together and we're all learning, but we were supporting one another. And then when it came time, I've written a few books. My daughter Imogen's written books. My daughter Charlotte's a graphic design degree. She's an artist. She did our book covers for us and illustrations, that type of thing. So we, as a family, we've worked together sharing our skills and all we have learnt together. But there were very few times where, for example, I had to sit down and do grade 2 maths with somebody or grade 6 maths or get my daughter through high school maths. We gave up on that a long, long time ago, trying to make kids do things like that. We didn't do. So my second daughter wanted to do advanced maths, but I found her the resources. And when I didn't have the time to do that, support her, I found her a tutor, which she really enjoyed. That was her time with this. It was a tutor who was also a family friend, and she used to enjoy that. So I think there's ways around things, but we didn't do things traditionally. And I can imagine if we had, I would have been, and we tried it once years ago. I tried making my kids do things I thought they should do while looking after a baby or looking after a toddler, and getting myself into a big mess, getting really, I used to call myself the dragon mother. I could always feel that stress building up inside me. I couldn't cope. It was just too overwhelming. How was I going to see to the needs of all these children? How was I going to make them learn what I thought was important? And one day it all just I'd had enough of being the dragon mother. And I thought things have to change. And we changed our whole approach. And I started listening to my kids. And I think, I don't know about whether you've gone through this stage as well, but as a younger parent and I guess registered homeschooler, I spent a lot of time listening to other people's opinions and expectations. And it was hard to shrug those off and say, I don't care what everybody else is doing. I don't care what everybody expects my kids to be doing. We're going to do it our own way. And that's how we got into unschooling, is because we were unschooling a long time without even realizing it, because we decided to do our own thing, and which involved listening to each other, helping each other do the things that were important to each of us, and yeah, ignoring everybody else to a certain extent. We still had to be registered homeschoolers, and I had to find a way to fulfill those requirements without imposing those requirements too heavily upon my kids, which might have spoilt the unschooling experience. So I don't know if that answered your question, but off the top of my head, you didn't give me any warning about that question?
No.
Before recording, talking about what we would talk about.
Yeah.
And then you talked about something completely different.
Sorry.
I surprised as well.
No.
It doesn't matter. It's an interesting topic, and looks like you had a beautiful cooperation team of being able to enjoy the same things, or, you know, make a, not exactly enjoying the same things, but contributing to the same project with your different passions.
Sharing skills, sharing everybody's skills. And sometimes those skills overlapped, and other times we just took advantage of a skill that we didn't have. Like, I can't draw, but my daughter can. So I asked her whether she would help me. Very much cooperation and also generosity, I think, in being willing to contribute to somebody else's passion and share skills. And they were I look back and I think about the things that brought us close together as a family, and all those happy memories are all to do with sharing our skills with each other and helping each other. Yeah, just do the things that we love doing. And that's very much in my blog. been worrying about it a bit recently, that growing up, my kids were so happy to share their stories. And so being a writer, I wrote, I've written nearly 1,000 unschooling stories on my blog. And also my kids were happy to be interviewed, but their life, their unschooling lives are out there in the public eye for anybody to read. And they were generous enough to do that for me. And it's only recently I've been thinking about more about privacy and the, you know, so how kids don't really understand the consequences. They might give you permission to do something, but do they have the vision or the foresight that adults have to see how that might affect them in later life? Do they really want their childhood stories online now that they're adults? Will it cause problems for them? I've been thinking.
Of course, it is a question we need to ask ourselves as advocates for parenting in the way we are doing and unschooling. But at the same time, there's so many hungry hearts out there. And that was why I mentioned the wonderful friend we have, we live with here, because the reason she followed your blog was that she had this just lust for seeing a different way of living and doing homeschooling, and the curiosity about, but how does it actually look then? Because it can be difficult to sit on the other side with more normal, traditional idea of what life should be, but feeling there's something lacking, and you can't imagine how life can be before you see other people living it like this. So I think you have helped greatly many people with the generosity of your writing and your children's participating in it, actually.
Thank you. Sometimes I just think, you know, I'll go delete the blog. But it's also, I think it's our lives. You're probably finding the same thing with your Instagram accounts and your videos and your podcasts. It's the story of your family as well as helping other people.
It's very vulnerable to do what you're doing and what we're doing. And even though it can help lots of people, it is also something we need to think about: how much of the story can we share, what's too private. And I've been putting a lot of thought into it as well, and I find it, and it's a balance to walk. How much do we actually share about their lives? Because the thing is, you cannot share the technique of unschooling without doing exactly what you've done. Is sharing all the stories. Mm-hmm. It's everyday life. It's not,
right.
She said in the beginning, unschooling is in, my voice is not cooperating. Unschooling is not something we do. I cannot say, now we're unschooling for the next 2 hours, and then I can record that and share it with the world. This is how we do it. Because it's a lifestyle. And if anyone in the other end who is not doing it has to arrive at a point of understanding without doing it themselves, they will have to read all the private stories, all the personal journeys, everything that happens, basically, to see the full picture of how this becomes an education or an alternative to an education that's worthy.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Cecilia. We're interrupting our own podcast just to make sure that you know that I am available if you want to talk to someone who has lived the unschooling life, who has traveled the world, who has beat cancer, who has been the mother of 4 amazing children. Luckily, I still am the mother of 4 amazing children. I know about life when it's hard. I know about life when it's complicated. I know what you need is probably most of all someone who will understand the special world that you are in as an unschooling parent. Even with your trauma and your personal history getting in the way, what I do really is to be a loving support, a rock. And I do it on the base that I am a trained psychologist. I have worked with a lot of people with a lot of different situations. I am so ready to be your support, the one that you need to get some confidence and be strong in your journey as an unschooling parent. So don't hold back. I give a 20-minute conversation for free. You can talk to me on the phone or in a video call and just see if it's a match. If you want to connect, you can find me on social media or find me on my website, ceciliaconrad.com. If you're a Danish speaker, I have a Danish website, ceciliaconrad.dk, and we can find those 20 minutes and see how it goes from there. And now back to the podcast.
The thing I also find is that there are a lot of people out in the world sharing unschooling, but they're only sharing the happy stories.
Yeah.
And they're having a very, and I don't think that's what life's like. And I don't think that's 100% encouraging. We all hope that our lives are going to be 100% happy, but we're growing as human beings ourselves, as well as our kids. And there's going to be times, and there's loads of times in our lives where we have no control over the external circumstances anyway. And sometimes I don't know, but I share those sort of times, but it's tricky sharing them when it's our children. I'm quite happy to share my bad days, what happened, how I felt, the growth that I went through, the thoughts I had. Pick yourself back up again. It's not the end of the world. We're learning, we're growing, we're making mistakes. It's just part of life. But to illustrate that with our children's own stories, that's the tricky bit. Yeah. And yes, I have a pretend friend called Amina, I write about on my blog sometimes, and she's in my books. And sometimes I give my stories to Amina so that it's one step removed from me. Mm. I talk to her and she's basically me, but people can't really say. I might have put a little bit of fabrication there, a bit of fiction. But I find that's the most tricky bit, is giving the honest view of unschooling. And I think that to say that you unschool and your life is going to be perfect is a little bit just misleading. And when people find out that it's a little bit tougher than they might have thought, maybe they'll think, oh, we're doing it wrong. And I've had a lot of people say that to me in the early years. Oh, your children must be suited to unschooling. You're suited to being an unschooling mother. It won't work with my family. And I think, well, it works with every family because it's just the way we all learn. It's not anything, like, it's not a method. It's just a way of life that is optimal for our happiness and our growth as people and our the way we learn. And that's why I think sometimes I got to unschooling without actually wanting to become unschoolers. We've been there, done that right at the beginning. I didn't understand it very well. It didn't work out. But then we sort of became unschoolers by mistake. And I thought, well, if you can get there without even meaning to, just as a natural growth of stop forcing kids to do things that are unimportant, or start listening to kids, start respecting each other. If you can get to unschooling just by, I say just, in a natural way, without saying, I'm going to be an unschooler, what are the steps I have to do, then I think that it's just part of life. It's not something that we have. If you be a Charlotte Mason homeschooler or classical, you're deciding to follow these steps. But for unschooling, it's just so wrapped up in life that you don't really need a blueprint for it, other than to maybe give away all those preconceived ideas that we have and just start listening to ourselves and our kids, and we'll get there.
Absolutely. Last week, we had the joy of interviewing Gordon Neufeld, and he's a very interesting man. He had written this book called Hold On To Your Kids, Why Parents Matter More Than Peers. And I'm to take it from the top, I'm the classical father, slow starter. I let my wife read all the books during the years, and she have been in lead of the family. And now, after many, many years, I'm starting to understand more, read more, study more myself about the whole thing about being a parent and unschooling.
Children are grown up.
And half of my children is grown up. So it's, I'm like,
you're ready for granddad.
Yeah. I'm getting ready to become a granddad. Yeah, hopefully. But there is so much of unschooling that is a parenting approach that doesn't have to do with the whole learning part of it. I think the whole learning part of it is minuscule when you go all the way out to unschooling, as you said, you use time on actually not forcing kids to do stupid stuff you don't want them to, and you start to listening to them, and this whole, and it's very close to the whole attachment theories as well, but there's something in unschooling that I still just love, because it, above being besides being just also a way of parenting, it is questioning what do you need to learn, when and why. And that part of it I still find very interesting. But I'm talking a little in circles around. Sometimes I think that we talk a lot about unschooling, but a lot of the stuff we're actually talking about is parenting more than it has to do with school or learning or teaching. And I've started to find that more and more fascinating.
I think you're right there, that when I started writing about unschooling, it was more how are we going to cover the maths? How are we going to satisfy homeschool registration requirements? What are my kids learning when we're reading books together? And then over the years, I got more and more involved in the unconditional love side. And that is what I feel is at the heart of unschooling now, is not, when we think of unschooling, a lot of critics think of unschooling as you let your kids do whatever they like, you do whatever you like. And it sounds a little bit, in one way, exciting, and you don't have to answer to anybody, but another way, irresponsible. Self-centered, if we're only doing what we like, what sort of people are we going to become? And I've thought a lot about how unschooling really is more about giving our kids and ourselves the freedom to choose to do what is right. Instead of forcing our kids to do what is right, they have the freedom to choose what is right. And how do they learn what is right? By their connections with us and our example. And that all sort of boils down to, I think, right at the heart of everything, I'm sure, is unconditional love. And that's not something that I set out with years ago or even read about in other people's writings. And I sat down one day and thought, perhaps I've got this wrong. Nobody's speaking about unconditional love. They're talking about all the other things, freedom and passions and how kids will learn if they're passionate, but nobody's talking about unconditional love. Perhaps I've got it all wrong. And
I think
there's a hunger there for that, though. The number of posts I label as love, and it keeps coming up as a recurring theme. And I think people need love, and our kids need that unconditional love. And everything else is based upon that, that when we say we're going to respect our kids, we're going to trust them, we're going to listen to what's important to them, we're going to value their interests, it's accepting them and loving them unconditionally instead of saying, giving them this idea that they're only valuable if they do what we say. I've probably got off topic there, but no, I think no, that no, unconditional no, love is,
should be is the topic. I mean, it is the topic. I think it's a very important thing to start talking about, and also for at least for our family, I find it highly unnatural for children to grow up in a context where there is not unconditional love, and that would be the school system. It's one of the reasons I would always argue that, well, maybe not always, maybe in 99% of cases, I would argue that it's better for the child to be at home, no matter what the context is, because at home you have unconditional love. And maybe it's a very thoughtful, elaborate, sweet, peaceful, unconditional love. And maybe it's more chaotic because of circumstances, but at least it's there. And I think that's really the spinal cord of growing up, in a way. There's no way of doing it in a real and right way if you keep being pushed away from that unconditional love every morning and pulled back into it in the evening and pushed away from it in the morning and pulled back in. That's a very chaotic emotional journey for children to make every day. And actually, maybe also for the parents to disconnect, reconnect, disconnect, reconnect. It impairs, I wouldn't go so far as to say the love, but it impairs the zone where the love can unfold, which means the experience of the love will be hurt and everybody will be stressed out. And this is probably the backbone. This is probably what it's all about. It's not about education. It's not about whether you read Shakespeare or watch Netflix together or not. Maybe you do both, but in different rooms. It's about, do we get to live a life based on that, soaked in that, with the light of that, because that's how it's meant to be. And that's what's ripped apart by this get up in the morning, go to each different places, meet exhausted in the afternoons, emotionally drained, psychologically stressed out. Why do we ask people to survive that year after year after year? It's horrible.
I came to a point where I realized that we can learn anything, anytime whatsoever, whether we're 6, 12, 20, 80, we can always learn facts and skills. But what we can't do is go back and gain that foundation of, we can't experience again as children that foundation of unconditional love that sets us up for everything else in life. That we can have trauma as a child and then we have to work through it and maybe we come to terms with it and we move on. But wouldn't it be so much better if we could give our kids what they needed as they were growing up? And I feel that is the most important thing. It doesn't really matter about Shakespeare except for the fact it's connecting us together and we're enjoying it. Mm. And we're having we're discussing stuff and we're talking about life and we're building our connections together. But I always think that it's so sad, I'm sure it happens a lot, that parents focus so much on grades and education and giving their kids a good start in life. That's what they feel is a good start in life. They can maybe get into university, go off and have a good, secure career. And that is the focus. But at the same time, ignoring that foundation that they could be giving their kids. They could be ignoring the grades. They could be sitting around the table drinking coffee and having those in-depth discussions. They could be ignoring the maths that nobody thinks is worth learning. We can't see a need for it now, but focusing on something else that a parent might not think will lead to a career, but it probably will. And letting kids do that and valuing what's important to a child. And then the child grows in confidence and likes who they are. And then I think we'll set out into the world with a much better, more confidence, and that they won't be surprised. Maybe they won't be led away from who they actually are by other people, because they know who they are. They know what they believe, and beliefs keep changing and opinions change as we all grow. But to have that confidence to express your opinion and not to go with the crowd, and things that I had to learn, and what got me into trouble with my own family at the beginning was I just wanted to be accepted by everybody and liked. And if my children were victims of poor parenting, or I didn't listen to them because I'd rather have listened to the group of mothers who I wanted to be accepted by, well, that was just the way it was until that time when it all became too overwhelming. And I thought, what am I doing? I'm trying to impress people who are not very important, who won't be part of my life forever. And I'm not listening to my kids, who I've only got in my home for a certain amount of time, who I want to love as much as I can, and give all that to them now, because you can't go back, can you? Mm-hmm. Do you have children that have left home?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, just a short interruption, as I have a small message about some of the things I'm working on. My name is Jesper Conrad. It is my pleasure to invite you to become a less stressed dad. I know how it is to be stressed out. My wife, I had cancer. I have 4 kids and I had a long career and had to like juggle everything at the same time. And it's hard. It's sometimes hard to be a dad. It's hard to be the breadwinner, if that's what you are. That's what I've been in our family, where my wife have been at home with our children. And it takes its toll. And one of the things that really help is to talk with someone else about it. And that is why I've created the Better Dad Institute together with my good friend Martin Cook. And at the Better Dad Institute, we have dad circles where we meet up once a week and just talk about life as a dad, because sharing actually is super, super healing in the process of being a dad. To just hear that someone else is working through the same problems that you are is very, very giving. And if you're into more like a one-on-one thing, then I would happily help you and share my experience of being a dad to 4 wonderful children and having a wonderful relationship with my wife and being a full-time travel dad, how I have juggling everything at the same time, having a career, and how I have learned to get those shoulders down to actually be very happy in my life. Of course, the stress can like pop up, but then I have the techniques I've learned and which I would love to teach you. So reach out at betterdadinstitute.com. And if you want to get directly in contact with me, then it's betterdadinstitute.com/Conrad. I look forward to hearing from you, and have fun. And now on with the podcast.
And you can't go back. No.
You can't. They can move back into the family home, but it's not the same.
No.
You can't go back and reclaim all those years that you could have been building on those connections and showing your love, and you just showing your kids that they're valuable people and that you think that they're awesome, regardless of the fact the outside world is telling you that don't build up your kids too much. They'll think they're something special. And I think, yeah, all kids are special.
Everybody should feel that.
Everybody.
It leads me to talk a little about parental insecurity. I don't believe I was super ready to become a dad when I became a dad. And maybe nobody is. And maybe we just need to get over ourselves and accept that a child has appeared in our life and we are the best option of a parent this child have, and figure out how to be the best parent. What can be so attractive with the school system and the norm is that when you're sending your kids to kindergarten or daycare or to school, then you kind of know you have done good enough as a parent. That's what you are being told by society, that you have done the right choices and the right things. Where I, to take these choices we have as being home with the children, not outsourcing the everyday care of them to other people, it's a really big choice where you can feel alone and be in doubt if you are good enough as a parent. What would your advice be to parents who are starting this journey and feel this insecurity? Because it is wild to become a parent.
It is. I think that the attraction of going along the traditional path is that if things all go wrong, if your kids don't get into university, if they don't get a good job, then it's not your fault as a parent because you did the accepted thing. It must be somebody else's fault, the system's fault, whatever. And that taking all that responsibility upon yourself is a heavy burden. Except I think that if we bring our kids up as unschoolers, their education, their upbringing, whatever, is their responsibility. It's not really, we don't want to, education, for example, you can't force kids to learn. So it's up to them to learn. And we have encouraged and provide the right conditions for learning. But ultimately, it all, it's maybe it sounds like passing on away my parental responsibilities. But I think that if we bring up kids as unschoolers, they take responsibility for themselves. They grow up being responsible. This is what we want as for our kids anyway, isn't it? We want to grow kids who become responsible adults. But the trouble with the system at school maybe is that kids don't have a lot of responsibility until they're thrust out into the world as adults. And then they have it all upon their shoulders. Whereas as unschoolers, we're continually passing on responsibility for our children. Within the safety of the family, they're getting the chance to make mistakes, to make choices. They might not succeed, but it's safe. We're with them. Mm. And they're learning as they're growing up. And I've heard a lot of parents say, I just can't unschool because what if my children turn around to me and say, oh, look, you didn't do enough for me. I am not prepared for life. And I'd feel so bad about it. And I think, well, that's not compatible with unschooling because our children, in theory, shouldn't say that because they'll have been brought up with the idea that they're responsible as well, that their happiness doesn't depend on us solely, that we're not there to feed them continually and to make sure they get to the other end. We're working together. I'm not saying we don't have a role, but we're helping each other.
I think that parents who say this, I've heard that exact thing as well many times. You know, what if they come back 20 years later and blame me for this and that? And really, that's the risk no matter what you do.
Exactly.
You risk that the children 20 years later will blame you for something and say, why did you do that? Would have been much better if you did something else. And as parents, I'm pretty sure all parents do their best. And they do what they think is the best thing to do. And if you can bring yourself in a position to believe that it is actually the best thing to do to free the children off the school system and allow them to have their personal freedom and grow up in a context of unconditional love, then yeah, that could be times where it's not so fun. And there could be things they missed out on. And there could be complaints 20 years later. But it's probably better. I believe it's better. I'm pretty sure it's better. That's why I'm doing it. So, I mean, that's the answer you can give that child 20 years later. I did this because I was pretty damn sure it was the right thing to do. And you had a better life this way than the other way. and there's no going back and doing it all over. So can we talk about something else? That's the answer for that projected child that will probably, as you say, never come back and say that after being unschooled. So,
but if they did, because unschooling isn't perfect, and if as long as we have decided what we believe is the right way to bring up our kids, the right way to treat other people, and we've done that to the best of our ability and apologize for mistakes, because we're going to make mistakes, but our kids are going to make them as well. So we forgive them, they forgive us. Yeah, we can't do any more, can we? It's not never going to be perfect, but as long as we strive, I think, to do what we believe is right. And maybe that's the bottom question. What do we believe is the right way to treat other people and especially our children? And then to do that, because I think there is a lot of, well, looking back at my early parenting and the way I was as a young adult, there's a lot of things that I cringe about. How could I have done that? How could I have spoken that way? How could I have yelled at my kids?
The list of regrets. Oh, yes.
Yeah. But we learn, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
And then as long as we are continually learning and continually loving and trying to do what we believe is right, then and I think, yeah, you say, what if they turn around? Well, I love your answer, Cecilia, that there's too much, I think, of young people turning around and wanting to be victims. You didn't do enough for me. Well, you go and do something for what you want to do. I'll help you, but we're not here to fix every single little problem for our kids. They have to, they have to take responsibility, I think, especially as adults. It's no good turning around as an adult and saying, you didn't do enough for me. Well, why didn't you speak up? And we could have done what you would like to have done earlier. It's no good turning around now. I gave you what I believe you needed. And now, I'm here still. Just change your pathway. What can we do to help you?
Unconditional love and teenagers, for some people, not in our case, but there is this general story going on in parenting that, when they become teens, they become difficult and I can't wait till they move away from home. And, these sayings people go around and say, and I've never felt that. I dreaded the day that our oldest started to live together with her boyfriend and moved away from the nest. And I don't think that they have, I haven't had these teenage, none of them have had these teenage rebellion kind of things. I'm not saying that teenage years aren't difficult, because they are. A lot of stuff happens. And yes, of course.
No, I'm just trying to cut it short because my voice is. What's so different about school teenagers? Why are they so different? That's the interesting question, because they are. I haven't met unschooling families complaining about teenagers. I haven't met unschooling families with this problem of miscommunication between teenagers and parents. I haven't met unschooling parents. But I've met a lot of unschooling parents of teenagers. They don't complain. They don't say they don't understand their teenager or that everything is conflict or all these things. This story about the horrible teenager is not there. That was what we initially wrote to you about when we started our email conversation. What is it with these teenagers? What's so different?
I think that for many teenagers, they're not listened to. And parents, even homeschooling parents, like to tell their kids what to think and what to believe because they're afraid that their kids might pick up ideas which the parents don't agree with. So it's risky listening and accepting what teenagers are thinking and what they want to express. But we've all got to work our own way through things, haven't we? And if we have families where we can sit around the table and discuss things and be open about what we believe and have and not force our kids to believe what we believe, I think there's more chance that they will believe what we believe because they're listened to and valued. And I just thinking back to when I was a teenager at school, and I hated it. I just hated my life. And I had to do things I didn't want to do. I studied subjects, which I was okay. I was pretty clever. I passed my exams, I went to uni. I never did what I wanted to do. And I didn't ever have a chance to explore who I was and what I believed and what my opinions were. It was almost like we have to parrot whoever's around us, school teachers, whoever. And so I grew up not really knowing who I was and not valuing who I was because I didn't know who I was. And I think that's the difference between our children, that they know to a better degree who they are. It's a lifelong process, isn't it? We've touched on, I think, in our emails about how unschooling changes parents. We're all growing and changing. So we can't expect our children to know themselves perfectly when they set off into the world, and they're going to change their opinions and that. But they have a better idea, I think, of who they are and what they want to do, at least with the first part of their life, because we change our minds about that as well, than somebody who's come through the school system and is being forced to go to classes they've no interest in, who don't get time to sit with their parents at night and just have those long conversations over coffee where they know that they're accepted, they can say what they like, and just enjoy being part of life. I think there's a lot of stress, isn't there, for the average teenager. And my teenagers didn't have that, and I assume yours don't either, that they, maybe some people would say, look, that's wrong. Teenagers should be trying to get, working harder, and you should be forcing your kids to do this, that, and the other. They've got to have a career and get on in life. But I think that that's the most important thing is time. Time to dream, time to think, time to chat with people, time to express opinions and have debates, time to sleep. And that's a big one too, isn't it? That the average teenager doesn't get enough sleep. They rush, rush, rush. Time just to enjoy being a teenager. Maybe that's the difference, is our teenagers had time to enjoy being who they were. And they didn't have to spend their life being frustrated or rebellious or whatever, or hiding. I hid a lot of who I thought I was. I couldn't actually explore who I was, but I knew I wasn't what, you know, I just wanted the time and the opportunity to be me. And you end up not talking about anything really that's important because you know that you might get shouted down or... Yeah, and that's why I guess was where you come back to being wanting to be accepted by everybody else, because you've got to fit in, and teenagers at school have to fit in. I've noticed something really interesting. I was listening to one of your podcasts about you were talking about socialization and finding friends for our kids, and sometimes it is difficult for our kids to find kindred spirit type friends.
Yes.
And one of my children in particular hasn't really found a kindred spirit type friend. And she's working now and she knows lots of people and lots of people her age. The problem is they're not kindred spirit type people. They've gone through the school system. They have different ways of communicating. I don't believe that they don't see the world like she sees it. They don't interested in the same sort of things. They use tactics that to make friends, like there's all this best friend, you're not my best friend type thing, even though they're adults now, they picked up from school. They're mean sometimes, that type of thing. They gossip. And I think, yeah, we make our kids different, don't we? by unschooling. Well, we don't make them. I think what we do is we allow our kids to be who they're supposed to be. And in a way,
they don't play those games. That's the other thing.
They don't.
Three times in this conversation, you've mentioned chatting over coffee. And I'm smiling inside because sometimes Jesper says, you just sit around and drink coffee. And really, I mean, it really
that's parenting. Yeah.
And I think sitting around drinking coffee, spending all those hours in conversation, allowing for understanding of the world and how we can be in it and who we are in it to unfold. It's what's different. Yeah. They have someone to talk to, and they know that now that we can be their imaginary friend, they can even talk to us when we're not around because they know what we would say. And I think teenagers who live their life in the school system, they learn to become detached from the family. They don't have hours and hours and hours and hours of conversation over coffee in the bank with their parents. They have these conversations with peers who are just as confused about everything. So there is no dynamic going on. It's just everybody shouting the same word and who's learning from that. I think that's the big difference. Of course, they are young and things change when they become teenagers. Clearly, it's different from the toddler, and it can be very frustrating and confusing, but it's not a conflict. We just sit around even more, drink coffee and chat, because now there is even more to talk about, and it's even more important, maybe. So what am I really saying? Yeah, the fact of having someone to talk to and having that relation where they know that they're okay no matter what.
Yeah.
That they can unfold no matter what. And we're not there to judge them. I think
Do you think that acceptance of what you're talking about will help our children avoid the problems I don't know about you, but me in particular, and a lot of other parents, where we feel the need to fit in with other peers and that we want to be accepted and that we don't, it's hard to, at least at the beginning, to listen to our children rather than our other parents and outside people, because we're still, inside us have this need to be accepted, which we didn't get as children. Well, I didn't get as a child, and maybe a lot of other people didn't get as children. We're still searching for that acceptance and that validation that we're okay. And do you think that our children, because we've had all those coffees and all those chats and we've listened carefully, whether we might prevent them from going down a similar pathway and give them the more confidence? And do you think that that is a possibility? That when we talk about how do you get over, like parents come and say, well, how do you have the confidence to do unschooling? How do you go your own way? How do you have not worry about the future, whatever? But does it start? Will it be different for our own children because we've filled up that need within them of love and acceptance, and they won't have to go out into the world and do what we see a lot of people doing is you see it in teenagers a lot at school where one person is the cool kid and all the others gather around and want to be to say the right thing, dress the right way, so they're accepted into the group. But I think that happens in parenting as well, that I've been part of groups where I've had to dress a certain way. I wouldn't dare tell other mothers what I'm reading, for example, because you want to be accepted.
Because
we all need that acceptance, we all need that support and encouragement and friendship.
And why do we need it? I'm diving deep into Gordon Neufeld's thoughts these days, and he's talking about the dangers in having a peer-orientated value system and life. And that is what a lot of our own childhood has been. My childhood was about being accepted by my peers more than my parents. My connections to some of my peers were stronger in the teenage years, and those were the ones I looked upon, I reflected myself upon, where in some ways in adult life, I've still done that from time to time, trying to be accepted by my peers rather than standing in a solid base of love from my parents and the generations above me. And I believe, so the answer to your first question, will our kids be different? Yes, I believe I can see that they stand on knowing themselves in such a deep way that they are not validating themselves too much on what their peers are thinking. They rest themselves in a way that I am envious of. And I'm trying to learn from them and saying, what is it I can take from that? How can I get that rest in myself that they have? And I look so much forward to meeting my grandchildren who have grown up with parents who have that base of trust in themselves and in the unconditional love from their parents, and to pass it on to their own kids. It will be so beautiful.
I think actually this goes, oh my God, I can't talk. I would like to say this, and then I probably have to stop talking for the rest of the day. I think it goes a little bit deeper. I think we're all different. Some people just have more confidence for many different reasons. But I think in order to be part of a social field, we do need to look for acceptance. We do need to show the people that we hang out with, that we are part of for some reason. Could be the soccer club, it could be the local neighborhood, it could be whatever social group that we want to be part of. We need to reach out and show that I'm not dangerous. I'm part of this. I'm willing to be part of this. So we conform to some extent. I think our children have learned so much about what social life is, why and when they need it, what part of it they need and want, and what social groups to interact with, that they know the trade-off. In this situation, let's say I want to be part of, I can't come up with a good one. I want to be part of this sewing club this summer. Let's say that. And for some reason in this sewing club, no one swears. They speak very nicely, all of them. So in order to be part of this sewing club where we sew things every Wednesday, I have to watch my mouth. I have to watch my language, to speak in a different way to be part of this. Do I want that? Is that a violation of who I am? And is that violation worth it? Can I do it for those 3 hours once a week so that I can be part of this? And do I want to? Those kinds of thoughts about what social life is, how it unfolds, and what we need to do to be part of it, they are on the backbone of our children. They know, maybe even to a more extreme than most unschooled children, because we also travel. So we keep moving into new cultures, new contexts, and we need to talk about, but this is how the game is played here. We can't just come and be who we are. We need to talk about what is so quintessential that it has to always be there so that you feel authentic. And what is just part of your dance today? Could you dance in a different way for the next 2 weeks? One of our daughters is, we have the option of going to Egypt, maybe, to live in Cairo. Cairo, how do you say in English?
Cairo.
For some months. And one of our daughters, she's refusing. because what she knows about Cairo is that she can't walk the streets alone. And she's just saying, I can visit for a weekend, but I don't want to live for several months in a country where I, as a woman, cannot walk the street on my own. I don't want that. And this is the kind of conversation I'm talking about. But now in a traveling context, it gets extreme because we can decide whether to go to Egypt or not based on, you know, will she feel that it's a violation of her authentic self? Or is it just a little thing that you can change for a few months so that you get an experience? And when, coming back to the question, when our unschooled children grow up, will they be insecure and need and seek for this affirmation of everyone else liking me? To some extent, yes, because we all need that social life. We all need to be part of something, and to be part of it is to be accepted by it. You don't have to be the center. You don't have to be the idolized, extreme, perfect version of it, but you want to be part of it, which means you need acceptance, which means you have to conform. But I think our children have so much experience in deciding when, why, and where to conform. And that's the difference. That's the big difference. They know, oh, I can just leave this. I don't need to be part of it.
But it's also because their base value isn't based on the external validation by a class full of people, which it was for me when I grew up. There was, again, this. It was the same group of people for 9 years I needed to feel accepted by, because it was 8 hours of my life every day. That's
yeah, but you couldn't leave. That's the thing.
I couldn't leave.
That's the thing. The school is a prison. And well, that's what I'm saying. Will our children grow up to have a different confidence, not feel that they need to be accepted? No. They will still need to feel accepted, but they can leave the context if they don't like the context and find another context to be accepted in, where they maybe like the version of themselves that they get to be.
Yeah,
I need to maybe stop talking.
Maybe it's sometimes we compromise who we are because we want to be accepted, and sometimes we're willing to adapt to other people because we make that choice. But the situation I come across most, and what was my situation, is that when you do things to be accepted by a group who you realize later aren't very important, and you're hurting other people like our children, so that you're trying to be accepted by the wrong group of people, if you see what I mean. It seems like the people I wanted to impress didn't turn out to be the important people. The people that I should have been more aware of was my children. And we're talking about teenagers, and as they become young adults, it becomes more obvious that our young children, they have no choice. They're in our families. They, even if we are unschoolers, they rely on us a lot. Then our children grow up to teenagers and young adults. And if they don't want anything to do with us, they don't really have to have anything to do with us. And I thought this about this one day, and I thought, am I the sort of person that I would love my teenagers and my young adults to associate with? Not because I'm their mother, but because they like the sort of person I am and how I relate to them. And so that relationship, it became more important than my outside relationships, because my children are more important. I don't think I'm explaining that very well.
Oh, yes,
but we spend so long trying to impress other adults. And I'm not saying we try and impress our children, but we want to be worthy people. We want them to want to know us, to value who we are as well. And of course, we all want our children to follow our example, but sometimes that might look like forcing them to be like us. But we want them to follow who we are because they there's something, because we're trying hard to do what we feel is right, and they pick up on that and say, hey, mom always tries to speak respectfully to me. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to treat other people with respect. And so, yeah, I just sat down one day and thought, what do my young adults think of me? And why they're the people that I should be more concerned about. Yeah. Because, yeah, I want to be the best person I can be for their sakes, not so I can be accepted into some other group. I've got to be me so that my kids benefit from that.
I think our the love of our, the unconditional love, if we earn the right to that from our children, if they love us because who we are in regards to them, that is probably the best validation you can get as a parent, as a grown-up, and more important than anything else.
Yeah, they don't love us just because we're mom and dad.
No.
But they love us because of who we are.
Mm. Yeah.
Not the relationship.
It's a sacred bond we need to honor. They have chosen us, and we are here for them. And it's such an honor.
Oh, it is.
We would love to talk more, but we try to keep our postcard episodes not too long because it is better for people that we just find a day to chat again. And
I talk too much, Jesper.
No, you don't. No, you don't. I would love one day of just talking unconditional love. Just talking about love. I find that could be a very good episode for a podcast. So I hope we can make our schedules work for that.
The weekend, two of my daughters left home. And my life is changing again. Oh, just so sad. You know, they're sort of exciting for them because they're flying off. And at the same time, that connection between us, they're my best friends. And they're not coming home in the afternoon after work anymore.
So hard.
And it's so hard.
It's so hard.
Yeah, but apart from that, I have more opportunity, I think, to do things like this. If we can tee up another time, I'd really love to talk to you again.
We should do that.
We should do that.
But now, for the sake of the wonderful people, for the sake of the wonderful people listening to this, before we find another time to chat, they should know how they could read your stories and get more in-depth knowledge about your work. So if you could be so kind to share the different websites you have and the books you have written so people know where to go look for more of Sue Elvis.
Well, my main website is storiesofanunschoolingfamily.com. I've been writing there for 14 years. So I've got stories from day one of sort of school age right up to adults. And I have an Instagram account at the moment, very tiny, Stories of an Unschooling Family, not many followers. I've got a podcast, same again, Stories of an Unschooling Family, which I started 10 years ago, but I haven't made an episode recently. And my books, Curious Unschoolers, A Radical Unschool Love, and The Unschool Challenge, and they're on Amazon. So I'm easy to find. Sue Elvis is an easy name to Google.
Oh, yes, it is. It is.
Beautiful.
And we will put in the links in the show notes for everybody listening. And so it's time to say, Sue, it has been so wonderful spending time together with you, exploring parenting, love, and all this wonderful unschooling together with you. Thanks a lot for your time.
And Thank you so much for asking me.
So the next time we speak, I will hope my voice is more up for it.
I have enjoyed the conversation immensely, and I just want to thank you both for the invitation. And I feel so encouraged when I get together with other people, and I think that it encourages us to go out there and share our stories a bit more with other people, doesn't it, when we have conversations like this instead of just sitting at home and wondering whether what we have to say anybody's interested in listening to. So thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you liked it, then please share it with all your friends and family. We would also love it if you gave our podcast a review. Thanks. And if you want to support our podcast and work, then you can find us on patreon.com/theconradfamily. We will continue to travel full time. And if you want to tag along, then please follow us on Facebook and Instagram @theconradfamily. And you can also read more than 100 blog posts on our website, theconrad.family. Until next time, make a wonderful day. Thank you.